If you want to find out the best information, I'm a firm believer in going right to the top. Find someone who is very good at what they do and ask them your questions. This episode is one where I do exactly that with former champion Eric Schlope. Now, Eric was on the US ski team and was destined to be up there with the likes of Ted Ligety. Unfortunately, had a really bad injury partway through his career. In this episode, however, you'll find out quite a lot of in-depth information from Eric on his ski boot setup, the way he approaches his training, and the top three drills he thinks will help you become a masterful skier. This podcast was actually recorded a couple of years ago when I got to sit down with Eric and a few friends over a beer. I took my phone out, hit record, as I thought this is too good an opportunity to pass up. I've cleaned up the audio so it's much easier to hear, so I think a lot of people are going to really enjoy this revisit from this podcast from the past. What I really love about this episode is I think it will inspire you to take a look at your own ski boot setup, as well as get out there and work on drills, as this is what nearly all the best do in order to get better. And speaking of which, if you want to get better and have access to the most extensive catalog of video learning about skiing on the internet, please go over and check out bigpictureskiing.com. Podcast listeners get 20% off any subscription if they use the code PODCAST at checkout. So seriously, make the most of this winter and improve your skiing technique with Big Picture Skiing.
So before we get to the other stuff that we tinkered with, obviously I'm going to leave the ski out of it just because that's a whole nother thing. Okay. So binding and plate position.
Yeah.
So literally millimeters. And then... with the binding, you know, we'd move maybe a centimeter forward or a centimeter back.
Yep.
And see if it's faster. And then we keep going till it wasn't faster and, and then bring it back. So we might move by like centimeters.
Yes.
And then millimeters. And then millimeters backwards.
Yeah.
And find that sweet spot. And every ski and every skier is different.
Yeah.
So
like you might have been, what did you find? Was there a bit of a trend for you?
So, I'll tell you what the trend was, which is the next layer up.
Okay.
So what we found was the binding or plate position was pretty universal. All the guys that were on that ski found it to be faster.
In this one, whether it's forward or back.
In that one position, so
universal kind of agreement.
Pretty much in agreement. The next layer up was, of course, people don't realize how important bindings are to speed.
Really?
Every binding is different. And everyone's like, oh, it's just holding your foot in there. But it actually has a relationship with the ski and the skier.
Okay.
And so bindings... finding like you'll like even like
for and you're soft, not you're not talking soft. About even just are you talking about weight
no just no. Binding how it manufacturer holds. Okay. Manufacturer so yeah. Like Christofferson right now he's on Rossi skis but he's using marker bindings and that's for a reason I guarantee that wasn't an easy process
for him to be able to do
doing that
so
here's what I found with me. So you've got three places to lift the heel or the toe. So you've got it under the binding. You've got your lifter plates.
Yep.
Then you've got your boot.
Boot plates.
Boot plates. And then you have your boot board.
Yep.
So you've got the,
the boot guy. Board. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got three different places. All of them make
a difference.
Have different outcomes. People think, oh, if I'm just going to raise the heel by a centimeter,
just do it in one of the easiest place.
Yeah. But it's not that easy. Yeah. Okay. It could be one of the three.
Yeah.
Or a combination of the three.
Okay.
So I found one year in 2001, I was on Nordica boots and Atomic skis. No, sorry. Technica boots, Atomic skis.
Yep.
And I raised under the binding, I actually raised my heel 12 millimeters above my toe. A lot of people are going the opposite way. They call it gas pedal. I don't agree with that. That might be anatomical. But personally, my thought is, if you want to get forward, you raise your heels, your center of mass goes forward.
Yep.
The other opinion is that you raise your heels up and then your butt drops.
Yeah.
I found that it put me in a position that was really powerful.
Do you know if you have a longer torso or longer leg?
I do.
You have a long torso.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Compared to other people who have long legs, shorter torso.
My wingspan, I'm 5'10", but my wingspan is 6'2".
Right.
So normally it matches with your with your height.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my long torso, I have long arms, long and a longer torso, spine. And shorter legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's maybe something I'd love to hear what you're finding out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was like a really big.
Like you did that and you went, oh yes, this is much better or what?
It was more the
faster.
I saw it on the times. Yeah. Because feel my son ski races and I'm like, hey, feel it's great to have touch. Too much feel can actually work against you. Because you might be fast, like crazy fast, and it feels like crap.
Yeah.
So an example of that was the Look had it was called the RK plate, which was like a metal plate. And it was like big and heavy, and it felt so bad, but it was so fast.
Right.
So I won the world championship bronze medal on the RK plate.
Okay.
And it didn't, never felt good, but it was always really fast.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So,
yep. Okay.
So then you've got your lifters and then you've got your glute board.
Can you give me an example of someone you knew that was gas pedaling and that they were faster with that? Do you know?
The only people I've heard gas using the gas pedal are junior racers. Now, I've been out of World Cup for 12 years.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody used the gas pedal when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I tried going both ways and I just found, and I had an extreme rise from heel to toe.
Yeah.
But
I guess, again, we're talking here, everyone doing this, their goal is to just go faster. They may not necessarily feel more control or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, you got to have the control, but it might feel rougher.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you're going so fast that you're just like making it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't feel good, but you're just, everything's clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, I mean, you're on World Cup that's injected ice and, you know, it's just, it's hard to feel good.
Okay. So I interrupted you. So we've done the binding plate.
Yep. Under the binding plate is where I found it. The other thing that I would say with that is that everything combines with the other thing.
Yep.
So whatever I had at the time, the skis, the bindings, the boot, that 12 millimeter heel to toe ramp angle might not have worked on a different setup.
Sure.
So it's almost like on every setup, you've got to
Through the process.
You go through, yes. And you can go down the rabbit hole quickly. So I always tell people, get your control setup, the whatever setup you know to currently be your fastest setup.
Yep.
Try one variable at a time.
Yeah.
And then add another variable. You know, so you get faster through each iteration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then moving up on the boot board. And I see this, which was really cool.
What Eric is referring to here is a carbon insole made by inventor and sprint coach Adarian Barr. I've been using these insoles for quite a while now, and I really like the effect they have. And you'll learn that what the carbon fiber insole is designed to do is something that Schlopi was trying to do via a adaptation or modification to his boot board.
What I did with my boot board was Harold Harb, he's out of Colorado. I took my boot boards to him, and we actually took a router right down the center line.
Yeah, of your foot.
Of my foot.
Yeah.
And then laid in high density rubber. So it actually did exactly this, but only did it one way.
Yeah, so to the big toe side.
To the inside edge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So as you initiate a turn, the rubber this is my right foot making a right footed turn.
Yeah.
Compress a little bit and then engage.
Yeah.
And what that did was I always tell people when you have your setup, you want your setup to feel like a dimmer switch as opposed to
snacks, gentlemen.
The lights
switch,
on off. Yeah. You want to be able to dim, get it bright, get it dim.
Yeah.
Right, dim. Yeah. And that's what that did was allow that.
It's not understanding. You put the a strip of rubber here?
Yeah, so we routed it out.
Yeah.
So no, on the inside.
Oh, so it made it squishy on the inside, but yes, but firm on the outside.
So we lowered the inside along this.
Yep.
Yeah.
This line,
longitudinal line.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we laid in like I don't know if it was 1 mil or 2 mil of high density rubber,
mm-hmm.
and we messed around with the rubber.
Yeah.
And like some rubber was too soft.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wanted it to be hard enough where you had to push on it to compress the rubber.
Sure.
So it wasn't like fitness room rubber. It
yeah.
was maybe a little less.
Like a high density foam.
Yeah.
Like a stiff foam.
Yeah. Yeah. A stiff foam.
George and I went and skied with Harold in November.
Yeah. Harold's, I really like Harold. He's, you know, he's a character. He's definitely a ski industry figure. All right. Next thing that we messed around with was really punching out the ankle bone on the medial side.
Yeah.
So Bodie and I actually, and a couple other guys, no pain on the medial ankle bone. What's it called? The talon?
The medial malleolus.
Malleolus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Malleolus.
Yeah. The malleolus. Yeah.
Yeah. The malleolus. So
yeah.
No pain, but we blew it out.
So you could get chin closer?
No.
No.
Because so when you go into a turn,
yeah,
I'm gonna do the best I can with my hands,
yeah,
but you want your foot and your ankle to articulate and push
and tilt, like pushed sideways, right?
Yeah, so you get more skeletal alignment.
Yeah.
So when your ankle is straight and you go and you tip the ski over, everything's going down the center line and wants you,
exactly, you know, it goes through the base of the ski and flatten, right?
Yeah. And if you can get your malleole, like that part of your ankle
closer to the edge,
then all of a sudden that pressure is coming down closer to the edge.
Yeah. Not the base.
Yeah. Skeletal strength.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The bones are so pushing.
You didn't feel if you're coming through right through the turn on ice,
mm-hmm.
you didn't feel this. The inside cuff
what? Right. You wanted it to be going. You wanted
drive right in.
Yes. Yeah. You want it to be going like this,
yeah,
as opposed to like this.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the recent things I've done through pain, but also realizing it feels better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is like
line it up.
Yeah. Like I've got a pretty bony malleolus.
Yeah. So the foot goes literally like that in the boot.
Yeah. And then, now you can apply pressure.
Yeah, so it's going here as opposed to
that.
Like that.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
And this is cool. I mean, it's
another way around the same problem, right?
Same. Yeah.
Like
exactly.
Like, yeah.
Except I don't know what it would feel like to have that extra. It almost feels like it would make the ski like hook the uphill ski, like grab too much. But I don't know. I mean, something you'd have to,
you'd have to feel. Yeah.
It almost seems like the lock, you know, like the lockdown in the middle, the whole length of it.
The first version of that I got, it came with a strip of carbon that went there.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was a skier and he's like, well, what? Like, he saw ski boots and he went, these things are not designed to help you get on the edge. They work against you. He's like, put this in. This will help give you a lever to tip it over.
Who is this guy?
Adarian Barr. He's like an athletics coach, sport coach, inventor.
I mean, it's great to talk to people like that outside of skiing.
Yeah.
Because that was working with a blank canvas.
Yep.
Which exactly. I love.
Yeah. He looks at it with fresh eyes and goes, there's a few other things. I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you did that with the boot board, but you didn't play fore and aft, right?
Yeah. So
you left it pretty.
We were kind of forced to grind the heel down.
to kind of compensate a bit for the
because of rules. Yeah. So we had a max boot height.
Yep.
50 millimeters, 55, whatever it was. I can't remember. But basically our boots had to comply with fist standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so they drop a little machine in there. Guys were wearing footbeds inside their socks. So when they took their feet out, the footbeds weren't in
there. Yeah,
But then they would start checking your feet. So, I mean, it was everything, right? So then...
And how much did you have to...
Drop to... Yeah, it was a couple mils. I mean, basically...
Okay, not...
Basically, we would drop it just to the point where our boot lifters, you know,
yeah,
when they dropped the plumb in there, it was compliant. So we did that to just comply with the rules, and then I worked everything outside as far as the ramp angle.
Yep.
And then... you know, I'm a big believer in, so my footbeds used to be nothing but just molded in my feet, but no material.
Posting.
So literally, zero posting.
You could rock that thing.
Was on the table, back and forth. There's no zero posting.
Yeah.
And I actually I liked mine 3/4. So I would, cut.
The toes were not, or the ball, the foot was not on the footbed.
Yeah. So, no, just the toes.
Just the toes.
So just past, where your foot turns into toes.
Yeah, yeah.
I cut that, and then I would grind it down so it had like a smooth transition, and that allowed my toes to be able to move. So I liked a lot of room just from here forward.
Yeah.
So part of that footbed cutting it was to just create
room.
Yeah, be able to let my toes move.
Yeah,
I like to pull my toes up.
Yeah,
so that engages my anterior tibialis.
Yeah,
which gives you ankle flexion, which keeps you in the on the front of the boot. So those
toes also actually evert your foot too. They're evert, so you can hold it there. So
sure,
it doesn't
pull your pinky toe up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So and then what else? Of course, we used to grind all of this out
so you could get your foot as close over,
because when we have edge angles that are here, the snow would grab this part of the boot and you'd slide them. So we'd grind as much as we could without ruining the integrity of the boot.
To help you with what he's describing here, basically if you took a boot on a table and tipped it sideways, there's a point at which the boot is going to touch the table as you're going for higher edge angles. So from the outside, they would grind plastic away so the boot could keep tipping further without what's called booting out. And not from the inside, from the outside.
Now you're just talking edge angle.
Yeah.
So you can see where this hits the table out, like right there.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be able to get to there.
Not a lot of edge angle.
You've got a binding plate and a ski, so it gets a little bit.
Yeah, but even so, this boot is like a race boot. Without grinding, it would probably be here.
Okay.
And then after grinding, it's here.
Yeah.
So.
Downsized a lot?
No, I upsized.
Oh.
So I was
a street shoe?
10, well now, like 10 and a half now. Yeah. But at the time, it's like 10.
Yeah. What size boot, shell?
So I raced for a long time with 25.5s.
Yeah.
And then... the Technica guys, Mike Curtis and Bart Tuttle, they had the Technica formula boot, which was that orange boot.
Yep.
And that was the boot that honestly, Bodie was on it after they sized me because I was on a Nordica, but it was all messed up. They're like, here, try these. And it was one size bigger than what I was used to using. I went out and took two runs. I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that particular boot, I was on it, Dane Spencer, Casey Puckett, Bodie,
mm-hmm.
and a couple other guys. And we went from never scoring, US hadn't scored World Cup points in GS.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a handful of points.
Yeah.
But certainly nobody was in the top 10 to all of us were scoring World Cup points, and then. And then I got.
What do you think it was about this boot compared to
It was
Nordica.
Power transfer. I mean, my Nordica. So it's a longer story.
Okay.
But the short story is I was making a comeback.
Yeah.
I didn't have any support from any factory or the US ski team. So I was on my own.
Yep.
And my boots, nobody was really helping me with my boots. So I had what I had.
Yeah.
And then the Technica guys. So like, you know, at the time it was Mike Curtis, Bart Tuttle. They were like, hey, come into the trailer. We want to see, you know, just try this new boot out. And then it was like immediately, immediately I had success. That's what put me on the...
How insane is that? Like a boot.
Yeah.
I mean, we understand now how important that is, but still.
That's taking it to another level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still have those boots?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I do.
Do you still skate them?
I do.
Really?
Yeah, if I go to like a...
like a
invitation
fundraising.
Yeah. I'll bring them. Yeah. It's more nostalgia.
Yeah.
I'm on Dalbella now and I love them.
Yeah.
They're like the most versatile boot.
Do you feel that? Is it? Yeah. The newer version?
The newer version, the DRS 96.
Because I used to be on Dalbella when they first.
Yeah. They were pretty aggressive.
Yeah. And yes. Yeah. Something. I do a lot of work.
But the new ones are.
They're pretty nice.
They're awesome. Yeah.
Okay.
They're the DRS 96. So it's basically the store race boot.
And do you, yeah. what do you, what flex do you ski in?
The high, the 140.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't they do them in soft?
Well, that's medium the, that's high. The race plug.
Oh, okay. You don't so, do the, you do the store.
I do the store because I want to be able to ski powder bumps.
Yeah.
Get in gates, make carving turns, and everything. I use the 140. And honestly, it's very soft for me.
Okay.
Yeah. The plug boots are 92 or 93 last, and not as comfortable.
Yeah.
And if I were racing, I would be on that.
Yep.
But I'm not.
Yep.
So I want to be able to do everything.
Yep.
So the other thing is too, I look at the characteristics of the plastic, and to me, This boot is almost too reactive. At least this plastic is.
Yeah.
You see it just snap into place. And this is better over here. This is closer to what I want to see with this, the inner flap.
Yeah. So you pull the flap and then
you want to see it vibrate and then slowly go back into its place.
Right. Not just.
So apologies for not having video of this. This was a last minute decision to record. But so you know, if you had a pair of ski boots and you took the top part of the cuff where there's the overlap, one hand grab one side, the other hand grab the other side so you could slide your foot in, he's basically taking one side, pulling it away like you're pulling like the back a crossbow or like a catapult and then letting go and feeling the reactive qualities of the plastic. Does it snap back like really quickly or does it come back kind of like not too fast, or when it comes back, does it kind of vibrate slowly back into position? And so this Fisher boot he was feeling, one of the vacuum plastics, he felt it was too reactive. So it would pull back and then snap back really fast and then not really vibrate and stop. It would just snap back and just be there. So this was a really strange but really interesting test that he was doing that I've never seen anyone do before, but this is something he does, would grab with his boots and would feel it out, and he likes a particular feel.
Not return so fast to home position.
Yeah, this is almost too reactive. If I had another boot, I could show you, but
the difference.
Snap,
okay.
I always kind of check the reaction, the plastic.
Do you think it's too responsive or too?
I think this is too responsive. Like carbon fiber would be the same way, where it's just wham.
Okay.
Like it just like goes right into place. I want to see it like when I snap it, it vibrates and then takes like 4 or 5 seconds to go back into its home.
Yeah. Okay. And see, then, for example, the Dalbellas, you feel that they have that?
Yeah. I mean, again, we're talking racing, you know, World Cup stuff.
Yep.
That's a 150 plug upper.
Yeah.
The lower is a 130 pin.
Yeah. And it's not the stiffness of the plastic. Yeah, it's the way it reacts when I snap it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would say, and personally, like, I mean, I'd have to ski in it, but I would prefer to see this boot take, you know, fibers.
And how did you get to, you know, like, why did you end up doing that rant? Like, I've never heard of anyone doing that test.
This test?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did it's someone show you that test? After, or were you just like,
no, no one showed it to me. Boots that I like, I, you know, play around with them and started snapping them just to see like what's the reaction. You know, I think at one
the
point
Eric
I had
snap
a,
test.
Yeah, I had a boot that. So Technica, they had that formula boot, and it truly was maybe the best boot ever made. And
wow,
but it had a flaw.
Yeah,
and that it would crack right here.
Yeah, the fissure.
Like that fissure. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So it would crack, and all the racers, you know, were always like plastic welding them and getting them fixed, and then Technica. At the time, this was early 2000s, they were like, oh man, like we want to fix that problem. So instead of creating a new mold to try and fix the problem, they took the mold that was the best boot ever made and they changed that mold. And then they gave us the new shells.
Yeah.
They were like a second and a half slower.
Wow.
Like going from top 10 in the World Cup to not qualify.
Yeah.
And so it was impossible to stay with that.
Yeah.
So I gave a couple pair to some people that really wanted them, but I have two shells left of the original. And you can see they both have the
crack.
Plastic welding on it. Yeah.
Do you think it was still skiing all right with the crack?
Well, I mean, it was
too soft.
If you didn't fix the crack, it would just keep going.
Okay.
So yeah. We would drill out the crack.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to survive.
Yeah.
And then we'd go get a plastic weld, and then that would crack. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, just continually fix
it. Yeah. That. Yeah. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Who cares? You know, you can at least still build new ones.
Yeah. I mean,
now they can't.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm sure there was other things, but that's kind of the overview.
What about like forward lean? Were a lot of the race boots already set up pretty good
race
with
boots
that?
Were what they were.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would mess with
like
with shims.
Yeah,
that was spoilers. Very personal.
Yeah, probably more to do with your calf side.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff. Yeah.
What I did with those Technica boots, which nobody's done since, which I loved, was. Instead of having a power strap, we took a rollerblade buckle and put it on the liner. So we'd buckle our boots, and then we just had a ratchet rollerblade buckle for the liner to cinch the liner down.
Yep. Right.
So it didn't change because with the power straps, and you'd get, this was pre-booster, right?
Yeah.
So the power straps would go here and it would actually lock you to the back of the boot.
Yeah.
So with just cinching
the liner...
Then you had the freedom.
Yeah, to actually move in the cuff a little bit to adjust that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Do you have a certain amount, I mean, like we do in rec boots, certain amount of 4F range of motion with the liner inside the plastic that you set based on the conditions? Or did you just...
Do you crank the crap out of your buckles or do you leave a little bit of play? Or is that...
I would say a little bit of play, but very little.
Yeah. But not cinch. You like a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't like to cut my circulation off. But yeah, you see any racer skiing and they unbuckle their. I mean, to this day, I'm like, my boots have to be tight enough where I have to unbuckle them at the end of every run.
Yeah.
If I want to enjoy my run down.
So, how do you go skiing bumps?
How do I
firstly rate yourself?
Oh,
skiing bumps.
No,
do you think you're a good bump
I'm
skier?
I'm 50 now, so I mean, unless they're really soft bumps, I don't love them. I would say when I was a junior, you know, in my teens and 20s, I mean, of course, you got to give props to the World Cup guys, the World Cup freestylers, but. I felt like, from a racer standpoint, I was a very good bump skier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, not right, because they're too edgy and...
Yeah, I mean, with the right skis and stuff. Yeah. I mean, now it's harder because back then, all the skis were pretty narrow.
Yeah.
So now, like, if I'm out there on my kendos, they're 90 wide.
Yeah.
So I'm skiing, like, all mountain. I can carve on the groomers. I can get off piste. But you get in the bumps, and now they're so wide, it's hard to have a quick edge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not the feeling I want in bumps, but I'm not going to have a pair of bump skis at this point. But the challenge now for rec skiers is that all the skis are so wide that their edge transfer in the bumps it's impossible to be as quick as you can.
Yeah.
With, you know.
Yeah.
The bumps, the pro bump skiers or the Olympic bump skiers, you know, they're like 60s.
Yeah.
You know, really. They're narrower than a race ski.
Yeah.
And they have no side cut. So they just, you know, so quick.
Yeah.
Edge to edge. And I'm sure that I would love to ski bumps on their skis.
It's funny, Wendy, because George was, he got it. Yeah, we were looking. He was in the back of the car.
The ID1s. I brought him out today because we're so ID1s are coming that makes just bump skis.
It's
Mike Page is
that. Okay, yeah.
And Nick,
yeah,
which is his son.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised. I was looking at it and I was like, wow, it's like 55 or something. It was like really narrow. But if you
want to ski bumps well, you got to have a quick edge.
And then he said he got a message from Anna Kearney saying, look, tips are, shorter poles, narrow skis.
Yeah.
That's all he's, you know, like, so.
Exactly. So yeah, my poles are too long. My skis are too wide to ski bumps the way I want to.
Yeah.
But I live with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, just because you want to ski the pole mountain.
Yeah. So I'll just make it work. And I still love to ski bumps. And, but, you know, I want it back in the 80s and early 90s. Like, I could hammer bumps pretty good.
So what?
Minus the aerials.
So, you know, the first time I heard your, like your name referred to was like, in like a ski drill, a schlopy drill.
Yeah, which is done wrong all around the world.
Okay, tell me about that.
So maybe you can.
I can write it.
Yes.
Maybe we can write the wrong schlopy drill in Australia or anybody.
You can. Through your website, you will correct the misconception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of the schlopy
drill. So two things with the schlopy drill. I got to stand up.
Okay.
This, but so the way everybody does it is,
can you
like,
film this?
You know what a teapot is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like this. That's a teapot.
Yeah.
And it's almost getting outdated because now, you know, the racers are trying not to collapse their hip. They want to stay more square.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I've heard like, oh, the schlopy drill is outdated. But I'm like, no, the schlopy drill is not a hip angulation drill.
This was absolutely fascinating to hear because through my instructor training over the years, this drill to me was taught as a hip angulation drill. And when you see a lot of people do it, this is what it looks like they're working on. So it's quite fascinating to hear from the person that, you know, the drill is named after is saying that people are actually getting this drill wrong.
Uh-huh.
It's an extension drill.
Okay.
So if you look at a shot putter,
yeah,
you know, they've got their shot here.
Yeah.
And they wind up
into compression.
When they extend, their power is coming from the legs, but the arm and the leg are
following
in
up.
Sync.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the schlopy drill is an extension drill, and the way it used to be was you'd start with your arm here, and you'd start the turn, and you'd extend through the turn with your arm and your leg together.
Uh-huh.
Because most people are stagnant.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Most people, you know, like
just
a really
dump
good
in
skier,
with, but don't extend the leg, right?
Yeah, they'll get lots of angles,
but they
actually, if you watch them in slow-mo, you're like, hey, that looks great. But you're going to literally make it two gates on a World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to extend through the turn for that power or at least hold your ground. So the schlopy drill is meant to have an extension.
Okay.
I was talking to somebody. They're like, actually, you should do it with the outside arm. But I'm like, you know, I've got to try it.
Yeah.
But it feels like it would make you actually
rotate
more than square.
Yeah.
But the schlopy drill.
So with your inside arm, what would you do with it?
So a lot of people just go up, but it's actually more like
into the center of the arc kind of thing.
Yeah. Center of the arc, but like I would say just like
a little bit
somewhere in between.
Okay.
Up and parallel.
So you're not inside.
Right.
But you're not, is that, you got to wear that perfect.
Yeah. You don't go like
pointing.
That.
Yeah.
It's and not more like this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Again, like if you were to extend it like that, you'd be dropping the hip. So it's more projecting.
Yeah. Right. But the outcome you want is to feel an extension.
Yeah.
So funny because that's probably the most recent thing with because I'm coaching online, right? And creating videos online to help people with this. That's where I've come up with, I'm like, wow, like all these other things are going well, but I haven't told people about extension, and everyone is doing these things, but their outside leg stays bent
or gets shorter.
And there's no strength, and they can't really develop more like progressive edge angle, and so that's really extension. Schlopy drill is an extension drill.
It is. Yeah.
Where did it get? Like
I would honestly, I have like 20 drills that are slopey drills, but they're all totally different in gear.
So what? Okay, what's your top three drills? If you were like, okay, I need to race Bodie Miller again. I want to kick his ass.
Well, yeah, he had no chance today.
What would be the top three drills you would do to get yourself back, like, feeling good?
Well, I'm going to give you the top three drills in my mind for anybody.
Yeah.
Especially, like, if you look, for me, I'm always thinking, like, future for U.S. skiers, right?
Yeah.
What do U.S. skiers need to do more of?
Yeah.
Because it works for everybody.
Yeah.
Number one drill.
Yeah.
One ski.
Yeah. We were just talking
about that today. Yeah. One ski drill does everything.
So how about that? Eric Schlope saying the number one drill, if you want to get good at skiing, is take one ski off and ski on one ski. And my co-coach Sam and I couldn't agree more with this sentence. I mean, if you really want to find the flaws in your skiing, your balance, your edging, timing, all that sort of stuff, one ski skiing will bring that all to the forefront and you will really learn how to build things up from the basics. And if you're interested in learning how to do the one ski skiing drill, my co-coach Sam teaches Emma, a real life student, how to do the drill on bigpictureskiing.com. You just need to go to the video library and search advanced carving and you'll see a series. And then one of the steps, he teaches her this drill, the ins and outs of it, and you see her skiing get rapidly better. She comments how much easier it is to feel and notice what's going on both skis.
Yeah. Like take one ski off, right?
Take one ski off, leave it at the bottom.
Yep.
Yeah. Or whatever. Yep. Have someone carry it for you.
Yeah.
But start on, like, you know, easy terrain, move up. And get to the point where you can carve turns on one ski and you could put a piece of paper on the video and you couldn't tell that person was on one ski.
Yeah.
Because totally agree. First of all, you can't execute it unless you're right on the front of the boot.
Yeah.
Can't lean in.
Yep.
You actually have to have snow contact.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you have a solid upper body.
Yep.
So, I mean, honestly, like one ski, is
you'll find out all your dark demon problems.
Yeah, right away.
And
you know, and it takes people, I mean, some people will never master it, but like a junior skier, we go on first time and, you know, Bunny Hill, and until I see a kid, I'm just going to say my son.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until he can carve. And then we'll go up and try it on a little bit harder train. In the beginning, won't be carving, but then slowly get to the point where, like, even on the World Cup, I do one ski drill and try and make perfect carves down like a blacktop. You know, so to me, the one ski drill is the master.
That's the king.
Yeah.
That's the king of drills.
Yeah. Other drills that I really like are the slopey drill to me is a good drill, but you actually have to be very advanced.
Yeah. It's for when you get into the point where you need that extension, right?
Yeah.
Like you're carving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're carving and you should do it on like easy to medium terrain. And I don't even introduce that one until somebody's like a pretty strong racer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But one that I really like is edgy wedgies.
Yeah.
So basically snow plowing.
Yeah.
And you're just going back and forth. Yeah. To the outside ski. and you can feel it engage.
Like a crab walk.
Well, crab walks are, a little, in my mind, crab walks are on a fire road, like a cat track.
Cat track, yeah.
And you lift your leg up and you just put the ski down.
Oh,
and
we're talking about different carve. Thing. Okay.
So it goes from carve to carve. So when you put it down, it's already like on the engaging edge. The side.
The one you're talking about, right, is like
edgy wedges,
too hard edge.
Yeah,
and you really feel that like, dish, dish, like.
Yeah, but
yeah,
contrary to like a really hard edge, I want to see somebody be able to get early pressure and even pressure.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, so you can see people do edgy wedges and they would jam it if their pressure is late.
Yeah. Okay.
So I want to see people actually understand to be able to get the ski to engage above the apex.
Yeah.
And then
build into the apex.
And then build into the apex. And it's okay to smear the turns a little bit. They don't have to be carves.
Yeah.
So it's just where the pressure is.
Okay.
And I tried this drill actually with Iceman.
Yeah.
The group I had one day. Nobody could do it.
Yeah.
They were all like, what? I don't get this. how are you doing that? And I'm like, it's just a snowplow. But you have to understand that, like, here's the timing of the pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you persist? And did they kind of get it?
Well, they loved it because all of a sudden these guys were like, wait a second.
We're missing something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a really easy thing to do.
Yeah.
One ski's tougher because you need someone to carry it or lead at the bottom. And
yeah.
People can be self-conscious about it. Edgy wedges, you can just do kind of anywhere on your own.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would typically warm up even on a World Cup, like racing World Cup. I'd warm up my first run edgy wedges. Yeah. And then just slowly go into turns.
Love it. That's so cool.
So, and then honestly, I spent.
What about, can I ask, like upper body discipline, like pole drip? Like,
yeah. What do you think about? That one's interesting. I did that a lot as a kid.
Yep.
I think some people can get really stagnant with that.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, you want your leg to extend, your body kind of works in harmony.
Yeah.
With your upper body works in harmony with your legs. And so there is movement there to really like kind of
so there's
sync
like
those movements.
There's maybe a point where it's like you're not flailing, you're quieting it down.
Yeah.
And then you can maybe work in the harmony.
Yeah.
Sync.
Yeah. And so.
Sorry to interrupt, but like Alice Robinson, wouldn't you say she's really got that?
She's doing something that she's trying something. In my opinion,
yeah,
she's a very extreme. She's trying to get that like square,
like a running,
like whoa,
yeah.
And she's like punches up into the air to try and get her ski to come through and square up.
Yeah,
I think she needs to calm that down.
Okay,
and do that in the right places.
Mm-hmm.
When she's on,
yeah,
she's the most dynamic,
yeah,
skier out there.
Yeah,
but she's like overdoing it. If she can just like pick her spots on the course when she uses that, like
less steep, right? Like,
yeah, less you want to generate,
yeah.
And you know, maybe a little less aggressive with that movement,
yeah,
because that movement is making it hard for her to keep snow contact. So she'll fly off the snow, lose 5 feet of line, and then all of a sudden she's way behind,
yeah.
But I do love the way she skis when she's on,
I'm a
big fan,
yeah.
And it looked to me like her setup wasn't right in China.
Yeah. So on that, what do you think? Do you have an opinion on why so many people blew out?
Yeah, because they'd never skied on
that kind of snow.
Artificial snow in China. And not all artificial snow is made equally.
Yeah.
You've got pH levels, you've got humidity, you've got temperatures, you've got all those mixed together. And for the most part in Scandinavia and the US and Europe, the man-made snow kind of, you know, they're all a little bit different.
Yeah.
But we know all three feels to those three regions. But we didn't have a test event.
Yeah.
You know, they were.
So just not, they're doing what they usually do on other snow that works. Yeah. They're doing it here and it just wasn't working. Just not
so
working.
Who knows what does, because there just hasn't been enough world-class skiers testing stuff out.
What did you think? I thought Sarah Hector's run was pretty unbelievable.
Insane, yeah.
How would you describe if someone's like, why was she better than, say, like even number 10 or even Federica?
Like, well, I think in China, it all came down to who could figure out the snow fastest.
Okay.
You got 10 or 15 people who could win that race.
Yeah.
And, you know, three of them really figured out the snow.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Or by luck, who knows? And the other 12 looked like they, you know, they were way off their mark.
Yeah.
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 And same with the guys.
Have you skied in China?
I haven't.
I've heard a couple of friends have gone over, one guy who's like a junior on the Australian team, and he said it is very tiring. Like, it is hard but extremely grippy.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, it looked like these people had this kind of false confidence of like, whoa, this is really grippy. I can just go way in, and then there's this point, and then they all slid out on their side.
I mean, you saw Odermatt in the Super G. I mean, he almost like totally ate shit.
Yeah.
And he pulled it off, and he was fine.
Yeah.
But you saw him like come around the turn, and all of a sudden it just grabbed, and he almost went high side into the fences. He made a great recovery, but yeah, you could see that it just, their setups weren't comfortable for them.
Yeah.
At least the majority of the racers.
What was like the biggest, like, do you recall one of the biggest breakthroughs in your skiing? Like you ski, like maybe it was like junior or something. You're like, yeah. And then someone said, hey, you know what you're forgetting is, or why don't you try this? Or
yeah. So, I mean, obviously long period of time there. So 18 years on the World Cup, but started racing when I was like 4.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was really racing when I was like 9 or 10. But the one that stands out, like just like right now,
yeah,
was second World Cup stint. We were training in Hintertux, and the coaches set what's called an apex drill. So 2 GS panels, 2 GS panels, 2 GS panels. So they're, you know, 2 GS panels down the fall line.
Yeah.
And the key is that you have to look at it, the apex in the middle of those two.
Yeah, like the gate is actually in the middle of the two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was really good for understanding the line, mm-hmm. but it was on easy terrain. So I could pretty much tuck turn everything. And when I was tuck turning in the apex drill is when I realized that I could actually focus on my extension. Mm-hmm. So I was in my tuck.
Yep.
Took my upper body out of it. Yep. Not a low tuck, a high tuck.
Yeah.
But I was really feeling my skis and feeling that extension through the apex. And all of a sudden.
So timing-wise, let's just check this. The timing-wise, the extension is, so if we've got the two panels, the high panel and the lower panel.
Yeah.
Where was the extension you're feeling it start?
Well, easiest to draw it out, but let's just say you've got the rise line.
Yeah, the rise. Yeah.
So I'm transferring to the new ski.
Yep.
And I've got flexion in my leg.
Yep. So you're not extended and, yet.
Yep. So I'm not extended yet, but a flexion. A lot of people start the term with too much extension.
Yeah.
So they have nowhere to go but down.
Yeah.
And getting smaller.
Yep.
So I'm flexed. I'm like flexed up, and then right after my edge, I create that platform. I'm extending through the turn.
Yep.
Extension starts. Still above the fall line.
Still above the fall line.
Yep. And that extension starts. And did you feel like it kind of went, it wasn't like extend, done.
No,
it was like extension.
Through the whole way. Yeah. Yeah. And then compression to start the next turn.
Yep.
So what do they call it? Like the French term.
Yeah, avalement.
Avalement.
Yeah.
And
if you really felt that.
Swallow.
Yeah.
So you like extending and then swallowing and then starting it over again.
Yeah. And so I was in Canada for all of January. And that's one drill we learned to teach, like to help people carve better in Australia, is like the extension retraction drill. And you really exaggerate it.
Yeah.
And I went back and I was teaching some people about it, and I had some epiphanies of it. And straight after doing like 3 days of it, skied this black pitch and someone videoed it. And I definitely felt and can see that like the best long turns I've made.
Yeah.
And it was, and I like, it's so funny you talking about the extension thing. That's the like the biggest thing I've felt and I am really trying to refine and work on. And it's hard, right? It's like a tight, like sometimes you get it right and the timing and
you got to be in sync with the fall line.
Yeah. And you've got to be also like dropping as you're extending. Like, cause some people like you extend, but you're not increasing edge angle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like this kind of feeling of, but that's just, interesting. So you felt that.
Yeah.
And in the tuck was almost easier because you didn't feel like your arms were locked out.
Everything simplified it.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden it just became from my torso down feeling that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again with my son, a lot of times I'll just be like, hey, just get in your high tuck.
Yeah.
And I want to see what your feet and your legs are doing. Mm-hmm. Take everything out of it except for what your legs are doing.
And so you did that, and then did you start getting the results too?
Yeah. Pretty- so that was the season where I ended up, you know, third in the World Cup standings that year.
No way.
And that was part of that breakthrough.
Yeah. And so you can do that, think about that in training, but in a World Cup, like are you actually thinking like at the top, do you go remember, like try and feel the extension or like
no, or I mean World Cup, I mean you you don't go full autopilot, but yeah. I mean, you have what you have. But I'd actually write down on a 3x5 card two focus points. And then I would consider even a World Cup, I'd consider it training in a race environment. So,
yep.
Like, and I'm just training.
Yep.
Just trying to get better.
Yep.
And it's in a race environment. I have a bib on, there's people here, but
yeah.
But I'm going to simplify today. It's not going to be like a discovery session.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very simple. Two focus points. And so I'd actually keep that with me, like in my suit or mm-hmm. my helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I got nervous,
just write it out.
Like, would start to feel like I was wandering a little bit with my mind, I'd just pull it out and be like, yeah, it's easy.
Yeah.
Just two points.
Are you good at other sports too? It's okay to be, you know, on yourself.
I think skiers in general.
Yeah.
My personal opinion. Yeah.
Good skiers.
Yeah. You take the World Cup Cup skiers. I think World Cup skiers are the most versatile athletes in the world.
Yeah.
And there is some fact to back that up. Remember the superstars competition?
Yeah.
So you'd have guys from football and hockey and basketball, boxers, you know, all these amazing athletes, and you'd have skiers.
Yeah.
And then they would do this event, like over 10 events. You'd have like sprinting, weightlifting, rock climbing, kayaking, biking. Every time a skier was in there, they would win.
Yeah, okay.
And so, if there were two skiers, they'd be first and second. So, like Herman Meyer and Bodie Miller battling out to win the superstars. But in the meantime, you had NFL All Pros, NBA All Pros, NHL All Pros.
Yeah.
So, you had, you know, every time a skier, Ingemar Stenmark won it, the Mayors won it, Bodie Miller won it. You know, and I think
that's pretty interesting.
Are versatile, and I would put myself in that.
So, like growing up,
versatile.
Did your parents give you versatility in terms of like you weren't just skiing all the time?
Totally. Yeah.
You're playing tennis, and
I played tennis. I played soccer. I skateboarded. I BMX raced.
Yeah.
I did track and field in high school just for fun, but still did it. Now, mountain biking comes naturally. Hockey, picked up hockey when I was 40. That, you know, was pretty natural with the edge angles and stuff. And, you know, I can surf pretty well.
Yeah.
I can water ski.
Yeah.
I think at a good level.
Yeah.
Do
you remember any of those sports you kind of maybe in a summertime you made a breakthrough in that sport and you went, oh, you know what? I could apply that to skiing. Did that ever happen?
Honestly, the only sport that I felt like I wish I did more of when I was a kid was hockey.
Yeah.
Because the generation of speed is the same.
Yeah.
You have to extend. I tell people, pretend you're on ice skates.
Yeah.
How are you going to go forward on skates?
Yeah.
You can't go like this.
Yeah.
You have to extend.
And you have to put the ski in the right place.
Speed skaters, watch how much they load up and they extend.
Yeah.
So I wish I had more exposure to hockey as a kid, or at least skating in general. Yeah. But, you know, I think it was more, I just enjoyed doing as many different sports as I could, as long as they weren't.
Have you taken that with
endurance sports
with your son? Okay, yeah, okay.
He's played everything. I've tried to get him to play more.
Yeah,
and he's a little hesitant, but he's got great balance. Like he can pick stuff up.
Yeah.
Actually, the other sport which translates really well is motocross. So you look at like the Mayors, Darren Rawls, they were like incredible motocross riders. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just translates. And so I actually, not because of this, but because I actually like to ride motocross, my son and I, we got motocross bikes. So we're going to do that this summer.
Cool.
It's for the adventure and, you know, just getting out on trails, but I also am like, this is going to be good for you.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
all about balance and mind and, you know, so.
And how's he going? Like, how do you see his progression?
He's doing awesome. Slalom is great.
Do you look at him and like, are there things you see that he's maybe like, really, you're like, yes.
Yeah. When he skis slalom.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 14.
Yeah.
But when he skis slalom, I'm like, I actually wish I had skied slalom like that. I mean, I had top five World Cup slaloms.
Yeah. But you like his style.
The way he skis is the way I wish I could ski.
Yeah. What is it in that? What do you see?
The way he stands. Yeah. And he's just tall and
strong
on the gate. Yeah. And it's just, it like consistent.
Yeah.
You know, again, he's 14. He's grown a foot. He's 6 feet tall.
He's grown, really?
He's grown a foot in the last year and a half.
Wow.
So I think it's that's like a challenge.
Zenhausen.
Yeah. I don't think he's, you know, it's just based on me.
Okay.
His mom, he's not going to be 6'7", but in my mind, maybe he's got another couple inches to grow.
Yeah.
But that's good because now he can catch up to a center of mass.
Yeah.
His center of mass right now is so far off of where it was.
Yeah. Right.
That it's confusing.
Figure it out. Yeah.
And especially in giant slalom. So super G. You can see he's got the time and he can figure that out in slalom. Same thing. You don't have time, but the way the center of mass works, GS is where he's struggling, I think, because of the center of mass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's 130 pounds. So he's, as he gets muscle mass on, he'll be able to just get so much more force in the ski.
And how much do you feel like you're in? Like, has he got a coach or are you his coach?
No, he's got a great coach, Chris Brigham, who was actually one of my coaches on the ski team.
Oh.
So he coached the U.S. ski team for 15 plus, maybe 20 years.
But how about, like, because, like, people get to this point, right? And to get to that point, like, how much do you feel, like, do you guys do a lot of free skiing when he was younger? Like, when he's, like, six,
yeah.
Seven,
well, he got
eight,
a
nine.
Late start. So he just last year committed to ski racing. Before then, he was only ever part-time.
Yeah.
And we actually even had 1 year. We lived in Spain. He only skied 5 days the whole year. So now when I get the ability to or have the opportunity to ski with him, we go free skiing just because I want him to ski the mountain.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation with Eric. I found this so fascinating. Like, in fact, that evening, I only slept 2.5 hours because I was just so wired from all the information and ideas running through my head from chatting with Eric. Now, on that topic, if you haven't checked out my website, bigpictureskiing.com, I invite you to go over there and have a look. There's a 7-day free trial. I've got hundreds of videos on all sorts of different topics, biomechanics, short turns, moguls, carving, everything, conditioning, off-season training, all that sort of stuff. And I basically download every bit of information I get through these experiences, training, opportunities to chat with some of the world's best, so I can help pass that on to you so you can also improve and feel your skiing keep getting better year after year. So let's get back to the chat with Eric. We're just actually talking now about one ski skiing again and the fact that Eric does this at the start of every season.
Oh, I do it. I do it every year.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, because if I do it with kids or a group of kids,
yeah,
then I do it. Because I actually want to show them.
Do you do it at Puxley or Deer Valley?
Mm,
wherever. What sort of terrain usually?
If I'm with kids and they're starting, then
beginner, right?
But
yeah,
wherever we are, and then I'll show them the progression of like, you know, with the terrain. But then you go back to the easy terrain, and you. No poles.
Yep.
So then you get rid of your poles.
Yep.
And then you can unbuckle your boots.
Yeah. You just keep adding layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, that's another drill is just skiing with your boots unbuckled.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Because if you're in the sweet spot,
you don't need your boots.
You don't need them.
Yeah.
It's just straight down through your ankle and into your foot. And so, you know, sometimes all people unbuckle their boots and it's got to be like once you get into like choppy terrain or something, you kind of do need your boots.
Yeah.
Constantly adjusting. But
It was pretty smooth. Pretty smooth terrain. Yeah.
Yeah. But you should be able to make like perfect arcs with your boots unbuckled.
So like, like you skied today, do you still like think about your skiing?
Oh yeah.
Like you,
I love skiing.
Okay. Like today, what were you thinking about?
Well, today was like off piece stuff. And,
but even so, like in the off piece, like what like helped, or like, you're like, oh yeah, if I do this, that's
actually the Avama.
Yeah. Okay. Extension, retraction.
Yeah. But it's not like, there's not so much time to build up that like GS turn feel,
sure.
But like really like finishing the turn in mogul, like powder moguls.
Yep.
And actually like really coming back to the front of my boot.
Yeah.
And like being quick.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what I was thinking about today.
Yeah. But
if I'm out there carving, like, you know, just ripping groomers.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, I really want to make perfect GS turns. You know, and be like, oh yeah, that's as good as I could have made it.
Yep. Back in the day.
World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I'm not nearly as strong or, you know, and
when you that, but when you make a turn, do you feel you're pretty much entirely on your outside ski?
I mean, it depends on the terrain.
Uh-huh.
The steeper it is, yes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yes.
Yeah.
That inside ski's on the ground.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Tracking.
Yeah, yeah. You're feeling it, you're controlling it.
Yeah.
But all like
structures all to the outside.
Yeah. Like I was just today was running up the lift and telling someone about that, like, you know, you just have to be like just 100% on your outside ski. And like, we're running up the lift and I'm like, look, that person's not. It was like an intermediary of the
right, yeah.
That person's not. This, we didn't see one person
actually at all,
like even close to it.
Yeah.
And they're all just skidding everywhere. And
so that's actually another drill that's really good. It's such an old school, simple drill.
Just lift the inside
ski. Lift the inside ski.
Yeah.
And it actually makes you complete the turn.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people, they don't complete the turn.
No, totally, right? They put the inside ski down right when you should be really on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or they just let the straighten out the skis.
Yeah, they don't.
And this is something like for my son.
Yeah.
He's in gates and he's not getting all the juice out of all the energy he can out of the ski.
Yeah.
He completes
right when the
turn.
Juice is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he lets off and then the dead zone.
Yeah.
In between transitioning
turns,
edges,
yeah,
becomes really long. And he'll start the turn because he has nothing else to do.
So he'll
start the turn, and then instinctively he knows that he's going to put his body through the panel.
Right.
Then he's
got to skid it sideways.
Skid it sideways. Now he knows he's going to put his head through the panel. So then actually the ski's correct back.
Yeah.
And then he goes down, and then he has to hammer
so
all
hard
below the gate.
Yeah.
And then it just turns into this like choppy, like low pressure.
Yeah.
And then he's low. Like,
yeah. And you've got no pressure momentum to tell you the next time.
Yeah.
That's not going to fly.
Still part of
the
process.
So you were like seeing that, you'd be like, right.
Maybe that.
Yep. Like you could literally just do one ski, like that outside ski, lift the inside ski.
The drill is lift the outside ski to
inside ski, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lift the inside ski till the turn, you feel all the juice out of the ski. And then you put the new one down, lift the inside up, and do the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen Michaela do that drill.
Yeah. It's such an old school drill.
Yeah. But for a good reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it still
just
works.
Makes your skiing better.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
But yeah, I have other like just fun play around drills, because my other concept is you have to be the best possible athlete you can be on your ski. So,
like jumping, just do it. Yeah.
Yeah,
pushing the limits
around.
Yeah.
Glenn Plake's favorite drill is called the Charleston, where you're like, the way you like lift your skis.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to like.
No, I know the Charleston.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and it's just be a better athlete on your skis.
Yeah.
Hop turns down the steepest thing you can find. How many hop turns can you do in that?
Yeah. Short space, do lots.
You know, and then, I mean, when I was little in Buffalo, we did a lot of hop turns. And, you know, at 10 years old, if it was a relatively easy slope, I could actually do hop turns up the hill. So I actually.
That's a drill I think that's actually pretty important.
Yeah.
I remember showing that, or just being in a snow plow on a really gentle slope. And can you like jump
backwards up the hill off the edge,
yeah.
right? Because then you're in alignment to be able to really be strong to deal with pressure trying to push you down the hill
yep.
so you can deflect.
And same concept is actually no poles skating uphill. Same thing as like speed.
Not skating backwards, skating up.
Yes, just pointing your skis up the hill.
Yep.
And it's not a steep hill, but
skate up.
It. Like if I was a junior coach, at the end of every practice, I would have everybody have a relay race up and around a gate
yeah.
that's 20 yards or 50 yards up the hill and just be like, go. And they, you know, up, 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 and then around the gate, and then you skate down, tag off, you know, even silly stuff like playing snow football with skis on.
Yeah.
In a field.
Yeah.
In a field.
Yeah.
And as you just get comfortable
yeah.
actually creating energy with
this equipment,
a big long piece of wood on your foot.
Yeah.
And like hopping around and this and that. Like I literally would just be like, let's groom out this field. We'll make two goals and we're going to play rugby or football.
On skis.
Yeah, touch, you know, of course. On skis, no poles, five on five. And you guys are going to go for half an hour yeah. and... It just kind of does a little of everything for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes skate. We live down in Ranch Place, so we skate ski along those trails.
Yeah.
And I notice that helps my skiing, you know, my downhill skiing.
Oh, yeah.
Go back to it.
Yeah. I'm not a great endurance athlete, but I can go with somebody who's a great endurance athlete on Nordic skis. And if they're not a great Nordic skier,
I can
easily keep up or go faster
yeah.
because of the efficiency of that yeah. of
using the ski.
Using the ski and yeah. the energy from that. No yeah. problem. So I always feel better when I go Nordic skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I go running, I don't feel good.
You or being close to 50 maybe.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite, like say you're skiing groomers, what's your favorite sort of ski? Do you like a GS ski still? Because that was sort of your discipline.
No,
you,
I mean,
do you like a
here in Utah?
Yeah.
Yeah. What, here yeah. in Utah, no.
What do you like?
I have, I'm a vocal athlete.
Yep.
I have all vocals. I have, they made a ski a couple of years ago called the RTM.
Yep.
So I have an RTM 81.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a Deacon Master.
Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah.
I have the 72.
Mine's 76.
Yeah.
And I like that somewhere around 80 millimeter wide.
Yep.
Give or take a couple millimeters.
And is that because the snow is a bit softer?
It's
and
too soft.
Yeah, yeah.
If you take a
70,
ski,
you boot out?
Boot out. So I can't lay it over.
Yeah, yeah.
So like an 80 wide, and if it's really soft, I actually don't mind like an 85, 90 wide.
Yeah, like your kendos.
But for the most part, you know, as long as it hasn't snowed a bunch in the last 3 days, then
that's 76.
That's 76 to 82.
Yeah,
I can lay it over, but the side cut is probably like 19 meters.
Yeah, nice, right? Like
yeah.
you've
180 ish long.
Yeah, you're not taking up the whole run, and
that's part of the problem too. Is yeah. that you know There's I don't want to freak people out.
Yeah.
So if nobody was on the trail, I would probably ski 190.
Yeah,
and I'd
25.
Ski 60 miles an hour all the time.
Yeah, 25 meter radius. Yeah,
with people, or if I'm skiing with people,
you've got to get your thrills in a shorter
I can get
space.
That feeling. Yeah. I can get the feeling I want without going. You know, I can go.
Hey, would you take the rocker out of those Deacon Masters if you could, or do you like?
I mean, I'd like to try. I would try it. Yeah, I mean,
That's what was my only complaint with that one. It just felt like it got a little static.
Well, they're making skis for the masses.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What we're talking about is the top couple percent of all skiers who are feeling what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so camber ski, we're going to feel more energy, be able to control it. But the other 95 to 99% of people find it easier when there's that early rocker.
And the
same thing they took out on their kendo, they used to have more tetanol
mm-hmm.
in it. So I could just
That's
rail GS turns on those.
I know.
And then they took it all out.
And you can't really.
And I can't anymore. Yeah. I mean, I could still do it with the snow soft, but I understand what they're doing because they're making a ski that's really easy.
Who's buying it mostly, right?
Yeah. Which I get.
Was that like when they had the Japanese graphics? Do you remember?
And just after that.
And just yeah. That was my favorite one because it only had tip rocker, didn't have tail rocker. And I can remember skiing that at Revelstoke and they've got some really long groomers down.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. I couldn't believe it worked that well.
Felt so good making GS turns on those. And then they were really versatile. I call, you know, it was really my, that was like my Iceman ski. Yeah. I called it my corporate outing ski because I could do anything on it. You know, I could,
you could show off and do it.
Yeah. I could
do a hip on the snow turn. And,
yeah. I could do that. And I could get into powder, get in whatever I wanted. So. So I still actually have those for those days, but.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I wish I didn't sell mine. I should have. Well, thanks so much, for just taking an hour out of your time
I love it.
Chat. It's just good because some people can't articulate it.
And George, shoots me a text, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, you just articulate things really well and you've obviously thought about it. And because I can imagine there are people that, they leave that to others to figure out.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, who was even
more sciencey nerdy?
Or just kept going with that stuff was Bodhi.
Yeah,
he's very very knowledgeable with equipment. He's like a savant,
really,
on certain levels. Yeah.
Can you give an example of how where you saw that all?
Well, he's on the. Full tilt boot down.
Yep.
And to me, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But then he talks about it and he talks about where is the energy coming from? Where's it going to? And he really gets it. You know, he actually created it's funny because we were both innovators. So I actually was the very first person in skiing to double stack because I understood the leverage point.
Double stack?
Yeah. So basically we had our, at the time it was called a Derby Flex, but so we had a plate.
Yeah.
And then I actually put another set of lifters on top of the plate.
Yep.
Everyone was just on the plate.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I'm booting. I'm still booting.
Yeah.
Out.
Give
if
me
I,
more
if
height.
If I get higher up, I'm going to have more leverage and not boot out. So I did that. And,
yep.
And that. We literally, I was only 19, but just started crushing races.
Huh.
And everybody saw it and did. And then they created the height limit. So everyone's always on the height limit.
Okay.
But basically, I added an extra 15 millimeters of lift.
Wow.
Before anybody did it.
Yeah.
And Bodhi was still a teenager and he had a fight with his coach because he wanted to
double stack.
And his coach wouldn't let him. And then he went and did it anyway.
Yeah.
So he. So like he and I had this like
at the time.
What's that?
There was no regulation on stack.
No regulation. Time.
Yeah.
No. So yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
So you're the reason for it.
Now I'm the reason.
So do you know? It's fun. Yeah, just side tangent on that. Also, I've talked to the guy, the inventor of the parabolic ski.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
Alain or K2?
Yeah, Alain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stenmark was basically the first. I don't think people knew that he was on.
Shape skis.
A shape ski.
Yeah,
nobody
right.
knows that.
Yeah.
And I can't even confirm it, but I heard that basically Stenmark had was on shape skis.
Yeah.
Shaped or sand?
No, he was he was on a lawn.
He just asked them to make it.
And so he had his own skis just made of more shape.
But this guy, he was like, if you want to feel like what real carving is like, just put a shitload of lifters on your binding, go really high. He's like, you will not slip out.
Yeah,
you will just rail, and so it's interesting. Yeah. Did you ever try that? Really, more than double stack?
No, okay. Because it also became
dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
But Bodhi came up with a lot of stuff, and I think a lot more that I don't even know about. A lot of the
stuff. What did he do with his boots? Did he do?
Well, he
stuff?
Actually was the one that.
Oh, he did the malleolus punch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he showed me the punch. He had a lot of different stuff going on. And
I heard he used to tear apart his liners. Is that true? Like, did he used to cut some material out of liners?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do it too, but only on a hot spot. So I would actually cut them instead of grinding the boot. I'd actually just
cut
take a razor, cut the liner, and then so it's just like
took the pressure off.
Yeah,
yeah,
pressure off.
What size shell are you skiing in now?
26.5.
Still a 26.5.
Yeah, yeah. But honestly, and the way I ski it is out of the box.
Yeah,
I don't do anything.
No way.
Grind, I don't punch. I literally just put a 3 mil lifter on and go.
Yeah.
But your foot's pretty rigid, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty like it doesn't flatten out if you're not.
No, I have a pretty big arch. And also my footbeds are just stock.
It's just whatever's in the boot.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind getting another pair of footbeds made. And also I'd like to grind out my toe box because my toes are starting to punch.
There you have it. A casual chat with World Cup skier Eric Schlope. Now, I really enjoyed this interview. I hope you did as well. I got a lot out of it, particularly just the importance of doing ski drills. It was cool to hear what Schlope thought were the top drills to be doing if you really want to master your skiing. And for me, it was the one ski skiing drill he does every season to get himself going. I mean, this is a tough drill, but he's right. If you can do this, and if you can do it up to a black run, which I don't think many people are going to be able to do, but you are certainly going to know where exactly your balance is and how to work and edge that ski. Now, if you didn't know, Eric is now a real estate agent in Park City. And being the great guy he is, I want to give him a plug. If you're looking for a house, you're looking to move to Park City, I think you couldn't go wrong by talking with an ex-World Cup skier, Eric Schlope, about skiing and also your new dream home. And finally, a plug for myself and my website, Big Picture Skiing. If you haven't checked it out, I put every single idea, video lessons, webinars, everything I've learned over my entire ski career on there, and the goal is to help you become a better skier. And people are improving all around the world. I had a great email from a lovely lady in Canada the other day saying that this was her big picture season, and she's consumed, I think, every single one of my 100 or so videos and Sam, my co-coach's videos. And she got the compliment the other day from a friend who hadn't seen her saying, wow, you look like a level 4 instructor. And so if you can do that via using the resources, video lessons on big picture skiing, and you know, you're over the other side of the world, I think that's fantastic. And that's exactly my dream and vision with this website. So finally, I just invite you, if you haven't, to go check out bigpictureskiing.com. I guarantee you'll find something in there that will help you, whether it's technique, equipment setup, lessons, progressions, mobility training over the summer, whatever. I want to help you make the most out of your skiing life and really achieve your goals. Thanks, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Big Picture Skiing Podcast.